Scene 9, Anthony Marsogliani, 1:50 p.m. A large, stout man entered. He was a little taller than Strong and a little wider. He had a considerable paunch, a large nose, and a dark stubble against his red face. He carried a half-gone cigar, which wasn't lit, but which smelled very bad anyway. He said in a rolling bass baritone, "Where's the body, Strong?" Strong jerked his thumb over his shoulder. "In the bathroom, boss." Marsogliani, I eventually got to know how his name was spelled, vanished into the bathroom, emerged after half a minute, and said to me, "You the guy who reported the body?" "I'm the guy," I said. He looked about the room with what seemed to me to be a practiced eye. His glance fell on the armchair with the clothes on it, and it seemed to me he was going to walk in that direction. "Don't touch anything," I said hastily. He turned his head slowly and put his cold eye on me. "I'm not going to touch anything. I'm going to call the police." Having taken the cigar out of his mouth to say that, he now put it back. I said, "Good. Call the police. Tell them there's a murdered man here." I'd been thinking murder from the minute I'd found the body, and I had wondered if I could bring myself to say the word. Now I had said it, and without any trouble. "Murdered?" Marsogliani, who had edged toward the phone, stopped, turned, and looked at me dispassionately. His appearance, his undistinguished brown suit complete with vest, his dead cigar, had all served to give rise in my mind to the stereotype of the dumb lawman. His eyes didn't fit the stereotype. He said, unperturbed, "You killed him?" "No, I found him exactly the way you see him now, but he didn't die in the tub. He died with his clothes on. It's a frame." Strong looked as though he were going to jump out of his skin in surprise when I said that, but his boss never turned a hair. "How do you figure that out?" I said, "I knew the murdered man, Giles DeVore, well. I roomed with him for a period of time. I've been in the rooms when he was taking a shower or getting dressed maybe 50 times. He folds his clothes. He hangs them up. He blows into his socks and flattens them out. He never throws them around like this. When I came in and saw this, I thought I was in the wrong room." "But the clothes are messed up. How do you account for it?" "He was killed. I don't know why. The murderer stripped him and then threw the clothes around, thinking that would make it look as though Giles were taking a shower."
"The murderer wasn't somebody who knew the man's habits, then?"
"No, he wasn't," I said. "Then he dragged him into the bathroom." Marsogliani took up the reconstruction. "Draped him carefully with his head against the faucets, soaped him a bit, rinsed him off, pulled down the curtain, and left." "Yes," I said. "And all because his clothes are scattered." "Yes," I said again. Marsogliani looked at me from either side of that big nose of his. "The dead man is a writer, I understand. You a writer, too?" "Yes," I said a third time.
"You write murder stories?"
He pronounced it moida, but I'm not going to try to reproduce linguistic peculiarities. I was relieved to be able to say no, and I said it forcefully.
"But you read them, don't you?"
"Sometimes."
"Well, then look here. Life is not like a murder mystery. In mysteries, people always do the same thing. Then when some little thing is out of line, some wise guy amateur detective makes big deductions. In real life, people don't do the same things all the time. They do different things at different times. In real life, people are crazy."
He moved toward the phone again. "I'm calling the police now. As far as I'm concerned, that's an accident in there. But whether it's an accident or a murder is not really my business. I just call the police and they'll decide. You want to tell them it's murder, you go ahead. But if you do, mister, just remember that you discovered the body. You had the key, Strong says, and you maybe had a motive. Think it over." His hand was on the phone, and I put my hand over his. Mine was half the size, and I don't think he was the least worried about me, but he said, "Well?"
"You don't want it to be a murder, do you?" I said. "Bad publicity."
"If it's a murder, it's a murder," he said. "But I don't want anyone yelling murder if it isn't a murder. That has nothing to do with publicity. The police don't like it either." And he lifted the phone as though my hand weren't weighing his down, waited a moment, and said, "Dial 911, Myrtle." I waited till he was finished and said, "There's heroin in this room." I meant it to have impact because I was sore at the guy, and for a minute I thought I had scored because his eyelids lifted and his eyes seemed to quiver. But when he spoke, it was with heavy indifference.
Where?
On the bureau, right next to where I put the key. It looks like talcum powder, but one of my books involved itself with the drug culture, and I know something about heroin. What I thought was talcum powder has a bitter, gritty taste, and I'm betting 8 to 5 it's heroin.
8 to 5, huh?
He walked to the bureau and said, I don't see even talcum powder. Come here and point it out. I half ran to the bureau. It was clear.
Marsogliani said, Are you telling me the dead man was an addict?
Not as far as I know, I muttered. He has no needle marks on him, at least not on any exposed part of his body. The police may be able to tell better when they've run an autopsy. Still, mister, if you tell them you saw heroin, and there isn't any, there's no way of describing how much trouble you could find yourself in. I'm not going to tell them anything about heroin because I don't see any. And I'm not going to tell them you said anything about heroin because I don't take anything you say seriously. But you'll be here, and if you want to tell them anything, that's your business. It's up to you.